Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It's June 22nd, 2017, and the nightmare is over. E3 has concluded, and we are freed to go back to not having anything to talk about for the next 6 months. I'm your host, James Jones, and with me today, fresh back from the disease-infested public E3, where he has no doubt caught many new diseases that his ancient immune system has never seen before, Mr. John Lindemann.
No, I've seen them all, James.
All of them?
Yep. The clap, whatever you want.
I really hope you didn't catch the clap at E3, John. It was just a spell.
It went away after a few hours.
It was all good. I don't aim sky high for you.
It's all good.
I'm gonna level set for what I expect John to do.
Yep.
I hold you in higher regard than getting the clap while like waiting in line to play Mario plus Rabbids.
No, it was at the XSEED booth. It was just, don't worry about it.
Well, that's actually like worse. Like in a way, like I feel like going in the XSEED booth should make you not want to think about sex. Anyway, also joined today by the man who did not apparently catch all kinds of communicative diseases, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
Greg, I need to start introing with you and then just skip John's intro altogether.
However you want to handle it.
Is it acceptable for me to intro a member of the show in third person and then not acknowledge them when they try to talk? That may be the angle to take going forward.
Yeah, I also don't mind you introing Greg by specifying that he has not caught the clap lately.
So. It's presumptuous in a way, but I'll take it.
You're right. It was unfair of me to assume. My apologies to you for assuming such things. I too have not caught the clap at the XSEED booth lately. Definitely for lack of trying. And this is episode 528. I got it right this time. I didn't magically deduct 300 episodes from the total. And we're gonna take it easy because Guillaume's out this week. John is in fact just back from E3. We produced a ton of content over at NintendoWorldReport.com that you can consume for all of your video game desires from Nintendo coverage, because we produced a hell of a lot of it. And you know, we'll call this a victory lap. We'll call this being lazy. We'll call this I'm editing for the third or fourth time in a row and just don't want to have a long episode to edit. But
so,
whatever.
James, I just have to ask you before we get into this. We're going to get deeper into it. Okay, uh-huh. So, it's well known that you're a mentor of mine, a role model, if you
oh,
will.
Oh, good.
Don't drop this on my doorstep. I hosted three of the RFN
There's
podcasts
three?
From E3. Yeah, there's three of them in there. There's three of them. Doesn't mean they all went up on the
John, I only have two.
Days. But
what the
but
fuck
yeah,
happened
so,
to number three?
I mean, what? Yeah, day one, day two, and day three. So
no. That is not accurate.
All right. But
I have day two and day three.
You listened to at least two of them.
I did. The two that exist.
What do you have to say to me? What critiques do you have as a host?
So I'm going to start with saying hosting the E3 podcast is hard. That's not like an attempt to soften the blow, because I would never do that. It's difficult because you've got big personalities in the room, Johnny. And people want to talk about what they've played, and everybody's got things on the top of their head, and they're both tired and excited, and adrenaline's doing weird shit. You haven't eaten correctly in a, let's say, E3 started about 2 months ago on the new E3 schedule. So, you know, your body's not acting right, your brain's not acting right, you're tired, but you can't sleep. And your brain just wants to vomit everything you've got to say about a game out. And you've got a group that doesn't have any real discipline with each other. Some of them don't have any mic discipline. They don't have podcast, you know, experience with each other. It's not a collective group. And I think you did well, because that's hosting that show kind of sucks. Like, it's fine. The show is what it is. But it's like there's people just want to talk. You know, they just want to – making a show out of it versus just a bunch of talking is something that we too will one day manage on RFN. We'll get there. We're not there yet. But you did a fine job, John, except apparently you lost an episode. Because there's only
only two of the two that I hosted, I guess.
You said you hosted three.
I guess I'm thinking I was on three of them. I only hosted two of them.
There was the one that I hosted here.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was the one we called into, and then
the two that I hosted. You confused the shit out of me, John. I was really worried.
You were confusing me.
I was worried we lost the podcast.
I'm like, yeah. I'm like, was there a podcast that I was on that you didn't know about? Like, anyways.
I'm going to adjust the hosting score accordingly for the mysterious third podcast that may or may not exist, the Bigfoot podcast, as we'll call it.
Let's just move on.
We'll call it episode 527 Bigfoot Pizza. But yeah, we'll move on. You did fine, John. Naming though, you gotta get names a little punchier. Little more bitter.
I had no punch left in me.
Get a little more, but you should have lots of acid left in you, lots of bile. Like really,
I do. It's really, often it's all I have left.
Really channel that when you name an E3 episode. Like really, really tap into like what's pissed you off. Be like, man, like you could name the episode, man, comma, insert NWR staffer here, really needs to get breathe right strips. Just fucking name it that. I don't care. Go nuts. Because that's what E3 is all about. It's about ruining relationships.
All right, you heard it here first, people.
this is where Neil's like, I need to make sure he doesn't go to E3 2018. Anyway, we don't have a lot of new business to cover, and as you've probably surmised, and I've already kind of said it, Guillaume is still trapped in Europe.
He's roaming around Glasgow.
Yeah, he will be back next week, presumably, if we let him. We'll figure it out. But Greg's going to run through some new business real quick. John, I don't have a lot to talk about. And then we're going to get straight to your listener mail.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. So, weird sort of. I did go on a little bit of a Metroid kick after the joyous news of.
Gotta have your fix, huh?
Well, you know, I said I was playing Zero Mission before, and just really because I was kind of. It's one of those things where you. E3 comes around, you think about it, you hope something's going to happen, but then you're like, nah, it probably isn't, so let's just enjoy what we've got. But then, yeah, they put some stuff on sale. I bought Super Metroid on new 3DS for half price. That's probably the one game I'm really guilty of buying too many times, but at least it was half price. And played more of that. But yeah, also I've got ARMS today. I haven't had much time to do a lot with it, just run through the Grand Prix so far. And it was nice also that they had the firmware update, so that you know the my friends list is really starting to populate again.
Yay. Because
all my old friends are suggested now, courtesy of the sort of actually using that whole Nintendo account thing that they were setting up for the past few years. So I'm sure I'll be playing that plenty in the next weeks. And then for some reason, just lots of demos for 3D. stuff. I haven't even played all of them. So we had Ever Oasis during E3. We've had since then Hey Pikmin today, and I think Miitopia today. Yeah, and then also most crucially, the Dr. Kawashima's devilish brain training. just to prove that it really is going to come out in Europe.
I want them to cancel it like the day before it comes out. I want them to send Don a review copy and then cancel it so he is the only European with the game.
Yeah, sort of seems fitting. But yeah, I have played the Pikmin and Ever Oasis demos. Ever Oasis, there's not a huge amount to it. The reviews just went up today, so obviously there's a lot more coverage of this game out there. Demo-wise, you just get a little glimpse into kind of how the town building and the kind of sort of more kind of usual kind of gathering quests, you know, sit alongside the sort of dungeon sort of aspects to it. So, you know, it's an action RPG kind of game, as I'm sure people know by now, made by Grezzo. You certainly see the Zelda remake kind of foundations in there in terms of the way that the map screen looks at the bottom, and John will enjoy this, the fonts. Seem very reminiscent of these Zelda remakes and all that kind of stuff. So it'll remind you a little bit of that. It'll remind you a bit of Secret of Mana, I guess, because of the three-character party, which is you'll also have that in mind because of the heritage of Grezzo, you know, the developer they have in the connections go back to Secret of Mana many years ago, and you switch among three characters, and they have different weapons that might have certain advantages against different enemies, and also have different abilities when you're in these situations. There's just a little minor bit of dungeon kind of stuff going on in the demo where you have some sort of very gentle puzzle solving to do, and the character's special abilities come into play there, so you're just sort of switching from one to another to solve those. And the little bit of a, you know, it's oddly unique to Monster Hunter, but it made me think of Monster Hunter just because I played that, you know, probably most recently, this sort of game in terms of like gathering materials. You know, you can go up to like a mineral deposit thing, hit it with a pickaxe, and then it'll, you know, give you some stuff, and then that'll be able to get complete a quest back in the Oasis, the kind of hub town area, and then, you know, the difference is you're kind of really building up that that town. That's a huge component of the game. You only really glimpse that in the demo, naturally, but certainly from the reviews I've read and whatnot, seems like that's, you know, a pretty major part of the game. Certainly interested in it, you know, but having just got ARMS, I'll probably be busy with that for a little while, but it's very much in consideration for the next time I fancy a 3DS game. And then there was the Pikmin demo, which you know, was interesting from the point of view that whereas Ever Oasis, while it was, you know, kind of, this was its second E3, did get a little bit of time on Treehouse, didn't it?
It did.
You know, Ever Oasis got again, even though it was coming out very shortly afterwards. Whereas Pikmin, as far as I can remember, apart from the amiibo being in a case, kind of got shut out, right? Like, I don't remember, you know, there really being any coverage of that on Treehouse.
You say that, but like, I feel like it did, but I don't know when.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch. I mean, being at the show, you never watch Treehouse. You have no time.
No, like, you pass it and you see it going on, and you maybe.
Yeah.
The only time I ever watched it was Xenoblade Chronicles X, because it wasn't on the show floor, and Johnny and I just sat there and watched it.
Yeah, I actually watched that. I think I watched that at the end of the first day. Like, I watched that basically after I got home. So, the one thing I will say about Treehouse is that I wish it didn't take up space in their booth. Because there's really no
advantage
to it at all.
Well, space is more a premium when you've got these big queues coming.
Yeah, exactly. That was the whole thing.
Made a ton of sense last year, and it made a ton of sense the year I was there when they had it. Like, it worked well in the booth. You know, it was something that, you know, you could actually watch if you were in line, or, you know, they had that little stage for Smash, and it was fine. Nintendo's booth is elaborate in the extreme. And I wonder if their booth is what it is because they started designing it a year ago before the whole public E3 thing happened.
Probably, yeah. I mean, their booth was actually fairly simple this year. They did the second day. They did move around things, so they dealt with the queues a bit better, in the sense that what they did the second day was they just had one long queue that split into five separate queues, and then they would send five people at once to the next row of Odyssey machines. So
yeah, and that's kind of what they did the year they had Splatoon the first time, that when they announced it, and it was one of those word of mouth games where, like, that first day people were interested in it because it looked so different from Nintendo stuff, and then the second day, like, it was getting kind of busy, and they had only kind of put it in a corner. So, like, they started, like, really finding ways to split the lineup and do all kinds of stuff. Like, they're pros. That's what I'll say about Nintendo's booth. They're pros.
Yeah, but I mean, back to Pikmin. I mean, I didn't see Pikmin anywhere.
It was not. It did not appear to be in the Treehouse Live. I just went through. Yeah. I went through the playlist they have for it on their YouTube page.
No. I mean, even having the luxury of not being at the show or anything, I haven't seen everything from Treehouse, but I don't believe.
Yeah.
It was discussed really or anything. You know.
No,
so,
I mean it wasn't. It wasn't back in their booth when we had the booth appointments. It wasn't back there at all. So.
Right.
It's kind of interesting because it's a little bit further off, you know, it might seem like it might need a bit more kind of attention than some other 3DS games that they did talk about. But, you know, anyway, the demo's here, you know, for that purpose to some extent. And so, you know, played that. You get like three different sort of parts. One is just the super basics, and then you get kind of two that are just the actual kind of presumably levels from the game. One, you're just using a single type of Pikmin, and then the latter level, you actually get Red Pikmin and Rock Pikmin together, which is kind of interesting because I know from the preview coverage that went up, you know, a little while ago now, what people had played, kind of, there was some kind of concern that what they played was just like dealing with one set of Pikmin at a time, you know. So, okay, here's a water level and you've just got all blue Pikmin, but that's it. Like, it wasn't like, obviously this is quite a different game, right, from the true Pikmin games, the regular Pikmin games, but, you know, in terms of incorporating part of that, you know, having a balance, using different types of Pikmin, you know, to overcome enemies or environmental puzzles, you know, getting objects, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of a core to the Pikmin kind of concept, so you'd like to see that represented. And in this case, there wasn't really anything too kind of relevant about the fact that they had some red Pikmin to start with and then you got rock ones. It was really mostly just rock ones that you wanted to use, but there seemed to be some elements there that suggested you could have you know, make some interesting uses with this game of having different kinds of Pikmin, because of course, you know, unlike the traditional Pikmin games, you're not manufacturing Pikmin anymore from the corpses of the things you beat. You know, you're just finding them in the side-scrolling levels. But, you know, what that gives is a scarcity of Pikmin, and so it seems like what that's going to do is that, you know, you need to keep the Pikmin, certain types of Pikmin alive if you're going to collect everything in a level. You've got certain kinds of treasures, you know, that you might not be able to get if you haven't got every, you know, a certain number of a certain type. You know, if there's a, for instance, I don't know, a treasure that's caught behind some sort of fire barrier, you're obviously going to need enough red Pikmin to be able to carry it across from that. But like, they had a moment in this particular sort of level in the demo where you've got these kind of, you have to throw Pikmin across this sort of area where you've got these kind of very spiny creatures sort of going across in formations that if you throw a red Pikmin and it hits one of these creatures, they die instantly. If you throw a rock Pikmin, then they kind of bounce off, and you know, obviously you haven't got them to where you want them to go, but they're not dead. You could sort of, you know, you could go back. So it's kind of interesting, something like that, where maybe you could set that up where it's like, well, yeah, you can use the rock Pikmin, are safer to use, but maybe if you could actually use the red Pikmin to achieve it, maybe it'll get you like an extra bit of treasure as well or something. So, you know, there could be some kind of interesting aspects to you know, the different Pikmin types and having them together, and I certainly hope like the puzzle solving and stuff kind of comes into its own as the game goes on. But, you know, it does, in general, the nature of the product does kind of seem like a way to, and this is certainly something that people have said with the preview coverage and whatnot, of like introducing the Pikmin world and characters to, you know, younger players, or, you know, people that might have found the regular games sort of relatively intimidating, or, you know, that kind of thing, or just not their cup of tea. So, yeah, I do wonder whether it's really going to kind of get that advanced in its final form. But, you know, there's some promise contained within this demo, and it's only in 2D, as you would expect, given the fact that it's one of those games that plays across the two screens, sort of like going back to the old days of DS. But, you know, it does actually look a little bit nicer than I was expecting, you know, and replicates the kind of Pikmin aesthetic quite nicely, if not obviously, you know, it can't really do it given the complete change of perspective and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I'm going to be keeping my eye out on this. It's, you know, of the pedigree with Arzest and all that, it's not the... You don't have the greatest level of confidence. You don't have the greatest level of confidence in the game necessarily, but equally I'm not just going to write it off. You know, I wait the reviews and all that with quite a lot of interest, because I do have quite a lot of affection for the Pikmin aesthetic and the characters and all that. It's something sort of you know, kind of endearing but also creepy. That's an amusing combination to me about that world.
That's John's motto, isn't it? Endearing but kind of creepy.
It's what I try. It's really aspirational more than anything.
which part are you aspiring to, and what have you succeeded at?
various parts, James.
Okay, well, that's fine. We're gonna step away from that disaster that I've just laid at my own feet, and actually we're gonna kind of roll into some listener mail. So you can send us email. I allow it. To do that, you would email it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can send it to other places, but we probably won't see it. So if you actually want us to fail at reading it versus fail at reading it by not reading it, I guess. I don't know. If you want us to have a chance to succeed and yet still fail at reading it, send it to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com.
Somebody was asking us this. I suppose they could also send us questions on Twitter, correct?
They could. Don't send it to the RFN Twitter, because nobody checks the mentions on that. Shh. I mean,
it sounds like a very useful thing.
I mean, I'm on top of it, James. What are you talking about?
I logged into it today and it had 99 plus unviewed mentions. So yeah, I'm guessing we're not on top of it. And like a third of them were us. So
maybe you should just, you know, use the incognito window or refresh your web browser or something like that.
Let's just do that.
I don't know.
My incognito browser's busy, John.
Yeah, What a show. What are we doing?
Who knew that Guillaume was the moral compass of the show?
Good
All right, so...
Lord,
everyone?
Now I'm sad. All right, so we're gonna do email. So rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can send it to John or myself on Twitter, or Guillaume. Guillaume is Guillaume NWR. John is Mr. Diamond J, and I am NWR_James. You can send it to the RFN official Twitter account, RFN Podcast, but I think Guillaume's the only one who's really active on there based on what gets retweeted.
By the way, I really like this first the phrasing of this first email, given what we've just talked about here.
I know. So, John, in fact, you like it so much, you're going to read it.
I like it so much. All right, I will. Mikey from Australia says, where can I send money for an RFN scarf? First time, long time? I don't even know what that means.
First time listener, long time listener, first time writer.
All right. Okay. My mind just went elsewhere. I apologize. Love the mature take on Nintendo stuff. Glad Greg's back. Take care. XOXO. Yeah. That mature take. Yeah. So we should probably. I wonder how much. Okay.
18
well,
plus.
Actually, I wonder what
Peggy 18.
Peggy 18.
We don't have a big enough box for the Peggy logo. I'm sorry.
That's just the USK logo.
You're right. I'm sorry. It's the USK one. That's the monstrosity.
Just thinking out loud, I wonder how hard it would be for us to actually get some RFN scarves made.
Well, it would be very difficult to think quietly on a podcast, to be fair. But you know what? Why don't I look into that while Greg, you read the next email?
Okay. so there's no information we have at this time about scarves.
Oh, we are reaching out to our business manager,
yeah,
which also happens to be us, because.
Yeah.
Because we don't have any employees on this show, just us.
By the way, just to be clear, I guess I've been back for the better part of 2 years, but that joke predates my return.
Yeah. And I will say, we could always, our backup plan could always be to hire the company that did the merchandise for E3, because the merchandise from E3 pretty much looked like it was from Cafe Press.
Yeah, Giant Bomb did a video on that stuff, and I felt ill. Like, legitimately
it
just
was,
felt bad.
It was like a pair. Honestly, that stuff was like a parody of gaming T-shirts.
Oh yeah, and like a bunch
it was
of controllers.
So cringeworthy.
That one that said "I'd tap that." It's like, ugh.
Yeah, awesome gamer
oh,
with
God.
An arrow like with an arrow pointing up.
Yeah.
I was at E3 2017. I mean, just some of the cheesiest.
Oh, just terrible.
It was
like
just
terrible.
And
what
merchandise.
Was what's amazing is that like. Being mad about this, I went and produced like two or three other shirts, and they easily could have made their way in, including the DS TurboGrafx Famicom logo shirt.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, speaking of Giant Bomb,
I'm a DTF gamer, yo.
It reminded me of their sort of memes where they found
coverage.
They found that website that where they could put the name of any game on the T-shirt.
Oh yeah.
Remember that? That's kind of what it reminded. Yeah, it was bad, bad.
It sounds like it's $37 to get a custom scarf printed. So, you can send it to our man if you need to ask how to pay him. You're not ready, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. if you know him, if you know our guy that we just said doesn't exist because we don't have any business managers.
But the thing is, though, we're going to sell this only in Europe, and we'll give out like five of them in the U.S. That's what we're going to do.
just
an FYI.
Send us $37 worth of gold shaved mm-hmm. into the form of paper with your address written on the back of it. It's going to be very small because $37 worth of gold is very small.
Yep. And we'll be the judge of what constitutes paper, by the way.
We will get you a scarf if we can read it mm-hmm. off the back of your gold leaf that you have written your address on. We'll get you a scarf. You pull that off. You get it to our guy. I'm not mm-hmm. saying he's a prince in Africa, but he might be. And you'll get a scarf. Custom printed with John's face on it. And just the phrase RFN. By the way, John, you signed away your image rights at some point. I forgot to tell you that.
I probably did.
All
it
right.
Sounds like something I'd do.
So email.
Yes. Yep, I'll take it then. Yep.
Please take us away.
Rob writes, "Hey crew, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. My question is, do you get frustrating watching quote unquote press play games at E3, especially series that have been around for years? And let's be honest, you should have some semblance of knowledge in how the games control. Last E3, Nintendo focused on Zelda, and with it came many videos of people playing, often poorly, Breath of the Wild. I will be honest, the game is tough, but watching everyone just play incredibly poorly really irked me. This hasn't been helped with Mario Odyssey this year, which left me screaming at the videos, wanting someone to take the controls away and give them to someone who at least played Mario 64. End of rant."
So I picked this email and I'm still losing it.
what I will say is that E3, because the lines were so long and there were so many people there, I had no choice but to watch press play games. Am I right?
So, to put it in terms of press, there is the enthusiast press, which is what they call us. That's people like myself, Greg, John, who are, you know, who work for outlets that explicitly cover video games.
We're not like the AP. At all times.
Yeah, we're not like the, you know, USA Today coming in there and just like, I'm gonna send somebody to cover video games. He's gonna play this thing. He's never seen video games before. His name's John Q. No Video Games. He's gonna play this and he's gonna not know how to press the A button. That does happen. And at E3, you'll see that.
Is that what that Denzel Washington movie's about?
Yeah, it's pretty much what it's about. I played New Super Mario Brothers on Wii with someone who gleefully exclaimed they hadn't played video games before, hadn't played video games in years, which would be a really kind of funny thing on day one. It was day three.
Mm-hmm. Did they jump on your head a lot?
They did a lot of nothing, which in that meant they just kept getting turned into a bubble and coming flying back in our direction. Mm-hmm. But you do see it. I mean, it's just par for the course. There's non-enthusiast press in there who are sent there to cover. But as the press has gotten younger, and field assignments is always kind of a young man's game. Even of course, I haven't been in 2 years, but even compared to my first E3, which was 2008, I think, or 2009, it's, I don't see a lot of that anymore. The people they're sending, and a lot of these outlets, as they've become more online centric, have started putting people in the role of being in touch with video gaming. And, you know, they maybe they're not full time associates, maybe they're contract. You don't see as much of that as you did back in the day. Like, my worst example is, was it Bear Grylls? It wasn't Bear Grylls. Bear Grylls didn't play his own game. I have seen
He's out living it, man.
I've seen Bear Grylls at E3, but he did not play Bear Grylls at E3. So that is actually a life loss. It was the one that was a cooking show tied to a Food Channel product. And he obviously did not know how to play video games and was just befuddled by his own game. But that's okay. Like, I'm not bothered by that. I'm not bothered by Pele not even knowing how to talk about video games. It's just fun. For me, to give the personal story, I was the AP wire photo of someone playing Skyward Sword.
Well, I mean, it's better than your usual picture, which is posted in post offices throughout the United States, but
also better than, you know, Miyamoto playing it on stage. It's true. The interference has screwed it.
It's
all
true.
Up.
And I'll say, I'm glad it wasn't video, because I didn't do a good job, because it was right after they had this was when Nintendo had a press conference, and then they had the games playable in their press conference afterwards. And so I got there, you know, I knew it was coming, even though they had hidden the kiosks and had positioned myself to get there first. And so, like, the people took photos of someone playing it, and I happened to be the someone in place. But if it had been video, I would have looked like I had some kind of disorder. So I sympathize. You know, I don't get frustrated. I would be more frustrated if an enthusiast press was doing it. And didn't have somebody there to do it. You know, there's the infamous video of Polygon playing Doom that got made fun of because they were terrible. And rightly so, they're made fun of it because they're an enthusiast outlet. And there is an acceptable barrier to, like, oh, you're good at this.
Yeah.
But, like, just general press, you know, if it's like the Wall Street Journal's reporter sent to cover E3 and he's terrible at Assassin's Creed Origins or whatever they're calling that one. You know, whatever. That's fine. I don't expect the Wall Street Journal to be enemies of the Templars anyway. So, you know, it is what it is.
Dude, I mean, I would say it's something that came up when I think it was on the last show or the other one that John hosted just recently, where I think it was, wasn't it Johnny basically said, yeah, E3 is just a shitty place to play video games.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
terrible.
It is.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, it isn't a great environment to play, so, you know, it's all well and good if sitting from afar, like I've always done, and I've seen videos every now and again where you're like, what are they trying to do? You know, like, but you know, it's easy to think that way, you know, when you're not crammed in like a sardine or whatever trying to play these things where there's all other noise and distractions and people watching over you. I mean, I hate people watching me play games. I've talked about that before.
Yeah, so it's unnerving. And also the fact too that you're under time pressure, right? You only have a certain amount of time to play the game.
And the other thing is, to be fair, like, you know, you're not trying to fucking set a speed run record or anything. I mean, to some extent you should be like testing stuff out. Yeah. Like, you know, it's not just about playing well. It's about, like, okay, can I do this with the controls? Can I, you know, like, can I go off and do something it doesn't expect me to do or want me to do or like that? That's valid. Not just about fucking looking.
I've also my fair share of E3 demos trying bullshit. Like, just like, oh, I killed the demo. Here you go.
Also, it depends on the type of game, too. I mean, I was playing Ni No Kuni 2, and if somebody would have been watching me play that, there's so many controls. I mean, the demo was two different boss battles, and if you would have watched me fight the first boss, it was awful because I had no idea what I was doing. There's so many nuances in the battle that you're just – with all these games, you're just thrown in front of them. It's like – it's the equivalent of being thrown in front of like an arcade game where you're like, oh, okay, well, I don't know what I'm doing. Let me look at the cabinet to see like where the controls are. Oh, all right. Well, that does that and that does that. And it's the same thing at E3. You're just tossed in front of these games, and often you're given absolutely no instructions.
And usually,
and you've never played the game before.
Usually the games that are the most out there are the ones you get the best instructions on. So, like...
Yeah, like, they'll have somebody there.
Like, Project Giant Robot had somebody whose only job it was to teach you to play that game before they really cut you loose.
Oh, yep. The sad irony.
Yeah, I know. But, like... If they had just handed me the controller for that thing, I might have had trouble starting it because it sure was a tech demo. Let's put it that
way.
Yeah,
I was like when we played Farming Simulator.
Oh my God.
I mean, I picked up that game and I had no idea what I was doing. Absolutely none.
I would love to see direct feed of you playing Farming Simulator.
I couldn't play it. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
I just drove around in a tractor. That's all I knew how to do.
And that game is like super popular. You wouldn't expect it, but it is. It's a huge game. And so if somebody from the Farming Simulator Enthusiast Press saw your video of playing Farming Simulator, they'd probably think like, man, this
come on, man.
Right here.
Yeah. Everybody knows how to play this.
You know you have to harvest the crops. Come on.
You know? Haven't plowed that field, asshole.
Come on, who is this guy? What a clown.
Like we would not be equipped to handle that game, and so we would look like buffoons playing it. And yep. I'll tell you, Greg raises a good point. Try playing a rhythm game when you can't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is headphones, but you've taken them off because your direct feed guy you're with has plugged the headphones jack into his capture device.
And there aren't always headphones to begin with anyways.
Yeah.
That's spotty at best.
So there's a video of me playing a rhythm game that sounds like absolute crap, or I look like crap playing it. I think it's a theater rhythm game because the headphone jack has been appropriated by someone who's capturing the audio. So I'm trying to play theater rhythm with no audio, and it looks bad. And it looks bad because I had no chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get mad. Like, there are times where I'll laugh. Like, this is funny how bad you are at this game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Split Second, I watch people play it, and we're just terrible because Split Second's a weird game. It is on its own. Mm-hmm. And that was fine, though. And sometimes the game's just not good. Like, it looks bad because the game's got problems. Just enjoy it. Just find the worst playthrough videos of it and just enjoy that. If it's the industry doing it, like they've brought in their influencers to play the game and they're terrible, laugh at them all you want. Like,
yeah.
Like,
just, well, because they probably had advanced access and rehearsed the whole thing.
Yeah, give them a hard time. If it's us and we look like crap playing the game, you can give us a hard time. We are enthusiast press. We should at least be, marginally competent. But Breath of the Wild's weird because it was so different. In fact, coming in,
yeah, I guess that's okay. That might actually be okay because obviously, what Rob's talking about is games that are big, established franchises have a bunch of conventions that you expect enthusiasts to know about. But I think with Breath of the Wild is that that's actually one case where I could see in that setting, especially of E3, your foreknowledge kind of working against you. Because, I know how a Zelda game controls. It controls like this. Whereas, that one actually controls quite a bit differently in a number of ways. So it could actually make it a little bit worse.
Well, and the demo for that game isn't a normal... Like, I've played Zelda at E3 twice now. And, the demo is always, here's the dungeon demo, here's a boss fight demo, and here's a minigame demo. And that's not what this demo was at all. This was just the start of the game.
Yeah, just go crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of video from E3 2016 of people just dying horribly in Zelda. But guess what? There's video of Nintendo employees dying horribly in that Zelda demo.
Yeah, also, there's just loads of little gifs of that on the internet after the game come out.
Right.
People share them gleefully. And it's one of the things that's fun about the game.
Yeah. So I don't get upset about it. It's fine. You can make fun of it. EA, the EA Star Wars demo during their press conference, that was, again, influencers, was bad for a lot of reasons, not least of which one of the hired influencers, when asked if he thought it was good, said that, yeah, it's all right, and then realized he was getting paid and said, actually, I'm lying, that's the best, or some bullshit like that.
Yeah, that was, what's funny, too, is... that was Golden Boy on the I think that was EA, right?
Yeah, it was EA.
That was the Battlefront stuff. And it's funny because he actually he does all the Halo stuff too.
Yeah.
So it was funny seeing him do that because he's explicitly getting paid.
Yeah.
He's explicitly getting paid to shill that stuff. And it was so funny because
like,
he's just like,
you can see his brain realize, like, I need to say a better answer than that.
It was so amazing. I'm like, oh man, Golden Boy, good job, dude.
But like in that B-reel hell that they put together for us of people playing that game, there were influencers who were terrible at it. And like they would cut to them and then immediately crash.
Yeah, I didn't see all of it, but man, some of those guys were just like, wow.
They were bad.
I watched some of it afterwards, and I was like, man.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate situation where you're like, look, EA, I wanted to see this game actually played well. I wanted to see what this game looks like. But that's a different thing. That's not the press. The press is there to write about the news, to give you impressions. And, you know, if you see video of somebody playing the game and they suck, and not like this is a new game to me, I'm struggling with it, but just like they don't seem to understand video games, then yeah, just ignore their coverage. It's because you're not going to get anything out of it. But if it's us and we're screwing up, give us a hard time. We probably deserve it. Mm-hmm. I say this because I didn't go D3 this year. Next year, though.
the
rules have changed.
Yeah. Judge not, lest ye be judged. I've never been to E3. I don't know how shite I'd be at any game, any given game.
I would say.
Circumstances. You're never going to catch me putting some stupid fucking comment on YouTube. Like, oh, you suck, man. Like,
just remember, it's
there,
like,
but
I mean,
for the grace of God, basically.
Yeah, it's like, that's the thing. I mean, really, with any type of game coverage, there's always a context, right? There's always, so you should never really freak out at any of that stuff. Ben writes, hey guys, as Guy is off gallivanting through a Scottish glen. That's very, very true. He's probably not fully clothed either, you know? I thought it was a very good opportunity to ask you about business. We all saw Monster Hunter last week at E3, generally an impressive leap on gameplay and a good showcase of skilled AI. My question is about it being on the power consoles. That is clearly a move for the Western markets, while historically, Monster Hunter follows and or shapes the Japanese market. Is this change in strategy a move to westernize the franchise? Is it a gamble for the home turf? Is that baseless rumor about Sony true? And by that, meaning that Sony paid money not for exclusivity, but so that Capcom would not make a Switch version. These questions all have the asterisk that there is a Switch Monster Hunter, assuming that there is a Switch Monster Hunter coming anyways. Does this mean that the IP is splitting down two paths, Western and Eastern, open and closed, vegetarian and barbecue? Yeah, so at E3, we got to see Monster Hunter World, and I mean, it's coming to PS4 and it's coming to Xbox One, and you know, the question would be, why is it coming to Xbox One, really? I would say this is so fucking it's so fucking weird doing this. No, just kind of cold.
I know. All right, so it's coming to Xbox One, PS4, and PC, and I think the explanation for why it's coming to Xbox One, you know, so I'm going to pull back the curtain a little bit. My audio screwed up, so we're restarting this email. Sorry. So if we sound weird, it's because we've already talked about this once. It's coming to Xbox One, PS4, PC. And the Xbox One part is, this thing is MT Framework.
Yep.
Getting it running on the Xbox One was probably relatively easy.
Yeah, and probably had more to do with the fact that they were porting it to PC anyways. So
right.
And PC being Capcom's main concern here, I think.
Well, and the West being Capcom's main concern here as well.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to release this game in the West with the intention of targeting the Western markets, which some of the changes to this game do seem to be targeted that way, most importantly, isn't a mechanical change at all. It's the fact it's not on a handheld. If you're targeting the Western market, then you should probably try to be on the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it. What are we at? What are that, about 20 million consoles?
But, I mean, it has to be 25 to 30 million by this point.
Yeah, so like it's an easily hittable target if you're using a framework that you know already works, and you're already going after the PC. I mean, obviously they're not releasing this game in Japan on the Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Like there's no reason to.
Yeah, there's no point. I mean, because if they release it, then they have to market it, and why market it to an install base that's virtually non-existent?
Right. Ty can only buy so many copies of Monster Hunter World.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, definitely they're trying to westernize the franchise. I think we've seen that with, you know, the releases of, you know, like Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate and stuff like that, where they're obviously making a concerted effort to make Monster Hunter more popular, and it is getting more popular. So definitely this makes sense in order to, you know, kind of broaden the appeal of the, you know, broaden the appeal of the franchise, you know, outside of Japan.
I wonder, though, as you said, it is getting more popular outside of Japan, but Nintendo, ironically, bears a responsibility for a lot of that, because they're the ones who've been pushing the series in America. You know, they've been running the marketing for this game in a lot of ways, for the 3DS games. You know, they've been featuring them prominently. They've been giving them the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And Capcom has made strides on making those games less, for lack of a better word, fucking atrocious to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those games historically have not given a shit if you can figure out what these games are. Mm-hmm. Like, they just don't. They're not welcoming. And we had the episode where you and I talked about playing the Monster Hunter. Was it 4U demo?
No, it wasn't. It was the old one on Wii. Monster Hunter 3, it was Try.
No, the one where we played the demo online on 3DS.
Oh, right, okay, that one.
The Try demo was on a disc, right?
It was, yeah, the Try demo was on a disc at GameStop's.
Yeah, the good old days.
Yeah, so, like, I was trying to learn Monster Hunter while you were basically trying to get me to play it correctly, and at some point I just had the insect glaive and was running around screaming.
Yeah, not the first choice that I would make as a weapon, but however...
But the game let you, and then didn't, and gave you some prompts that weren't great, on how to use the insect glaive. But it's.
Well, yeah, it's tough to get people to learn a game where an intrinsic part of the gameplay is figuring out how the monster behaves on your own.
Right, and how your particular weapon is good against it. And here's the thing about what Monster Hunter does, and. Monster Hunter is a series that rewards preparation. It's about getting yourself ready to go on whatever hunt you're looking for. And some of that is, you know, mentally prepared. I know how I'm going to fight this thing. I've done my recon, how to deal with it. I know where it is. I know how to find it. I know how to kill it. And some of it is just preparing your supplies, preparing your weapons, preparing your food. Like, there's that whole box you drop supplies in before the mission. Which is goofy in and of itself. There's just a box you put your stuff in. But, you know, there's a game that came out this year that has very similar concepts on Switch that we all talked about.
Mm-hmm. And I would also argue that the Nintendo audience is now the incumbent audience for Monster Hunter.
Sure.
And Capcom knows that.
Yeah. You know. But there's a way to do what Capcom tries to do in Monster Hunter way more approachably. I mean, you could conceivably argue that not really, because a lot of the Monster Hunter clones that popped up on Vita after it made the PlayStation Switch are equally not super approachable. But Zelda is very approachable. You know, it's not as complicated systems-wise as Monster Hunter is, obviously. But that's some of what they're dealing with in world. They're sanding down some of those systems.
Yeah, and probably... kind of introducing Monster Hunter with new types of gameplay, sort of a new gameplay paradigm. You still do move from area to area. The difference being, though, that it's seamless,
right?
You know, you don't have any kind of load screens or anything like that. You are in one big area. You're just moving through zones on a large map now, as opposed to moving from enclosed zone to enclosed zone to enclosed zone.
So there's still different biomes. Is it basically, again, Zelda-like, where like this suddenly bright and visible line is where the cold starts?
Probably.
You just walk through it?
Yeah, it was hard to tell from the theater demo they had at E3. I don't recall.
That's
because
true.
It was
very focused.
It was very focused on the battle. You know, could they put Monster Hunter Worlds on Switch? It's MT Framework, so they could certainly port it. My concern would be, you know, the AI with several creatures at once and stuff like that. But
we don't know how we don't know how complicated the AI is and how much of it's just scripting. Like, oh, in this environment, I do this.
Yeah, or if you encounter this monster, do right. this particular thing.
Or,
right.
Or versus emergent behavior where it goes like, or it actually makes some decisions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's, I didn't see anything visually that jumped out at me as like, ooh, maybe at 900p, this wouldn't work still.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, and I mean, and it's not like they're completely ignoring the Monster Hunter crowd. I mean, obviously, you know, they have a game coming to Switch. It's a port of an existing game, roughly.
Well, it's a port of a version of an existing game at that. So it's Monster Hunter Double Cross, which is the plus 1 year version of Monster Hunter Cross.
Yep.
But at the same time, Capcom completely fucked up their messaging. In an interview with GameSpot. Where they said that we have no plans to bring Monster Hunter Double Cross to the West. And then they then they came back later and Hazel said, at this time.
Yeah, they kind of backtracked on that.
When a company says that and then they add on the at this time later, to me that screams the at this time is not actually part of the sentence. Like they threw that in there because they realized they fucked up the statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
I don't think they're bringing Monster Hunter Double Cross to the West, honestly.
No, I don't think so. I do think, I think they're gonna bring Monster Hunter 5. I think they're gonna bring the next mainline version to
but
the Switch.
But in the same interviews, they've been saying this is the next mainline version. That Monster Hunter World is the mainline version. They dropped the 5 because it's that whole thing where like, oh, this is the 5th game. I don't know if this is for me.
Yeah, but that's the point, isn't it? Is that this game is trying to reach out to people that,
right.
you know, mm-hmm. maybe they feel like might have some kind of interest in the game, but they haven't been able to kind of close the deal with them, and that, you know, being on these consoles and having this level of graphical power and doing away with some of the series conventions and whatnot, that that, you know, that they can make a play for them. But at the same time, we know that the series, with all its established conventions and sort of weird, you know, sort of the esoteric nature and all that, has a very loyal fan base. You know, and I don't think they're going to just stop serving that anytime soon either. So. Mm-hmm. It's natural for them to say, you know, when this is their new product, like, oh yeah, this is the real deal, you know, this is the next big Monster Hunter game and all this kind of stuff. And you know, but I do feel like it's a play for them to, you know, as is suggested in the question by Ben, in terms of westernizing the franchise, but not necessarily to the exclusion of the other games, like, you know, like that it would only be that way. I feel like, you know, like I said, it's got a very dedicated fan base in Japan. They've made some progress with it, as you mentioned earlier, in other markets, but they probably also feel like there's a limit to that, you know, there's only so sort of popular it can get in that form. But I don't think they're just going to cast that off altogether if this is successful or whatever. And I could see Switch being, you know, very well positioned to, you know, receive those more traditional Monster Hunter games, if nothing else, because of its nature as a portable, you know, a device, which is, you know, where the series has found its the greatest success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think this will give them more leeway with what they do with the Switch version when it eventually does come out, you know?
So if this game succeeds, they could turn around and say, okay, well, the next one's coming to Switch too.
Well, yeah, or rather say this slightly upgraded or expanded style of gameplay is now what we're going to use with the Switch version. And everybody would be like, oh, okay, well, I'm already familiar with that from the PS4 version or Xbox One version or PC version or whatever. And
or I live in Japan and don't own any of those things, and therefore... we talked about this in the first recording of this question, so I don't have a clean segue for it, so I'm just going to give the game away on that. The inclusion of the PC version is important for Capcom outside of Japan and North America and Europe. Because in places like Russia, in places like China, in places like Korea, while consoles have entered this space, while historically they were harder to get in there, they are not as deeply penetrated as gaming on the PC is. It's just kind of the nature of what sells in those regions.
Yeah, also a lot more piracy.
Oh, totally. Yeah, Russia is like the piracy capital of the world.
Now there already is a Monster Hunter game in China, if I recall.
There is a China
Monster Hunter Online.
There's a China focused game called Monster Hunter Online. I don't know if it's any good or not, but again, it's a PC game, and
it has like higher quality models, right? Than anything the series had ever had before.
Because they weren't up-resed PS2 to the 3DS.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Monster Hunter had kind of turned into the joke you make about Polyphony Digital's game, where it would be like, this version has 800 cars in it, but 750 of them are from the PS2. there's a market they've not been able to serve, because this kind of game should be successful in a place like Korea. You know, it sort of fits the mold of what their market would be interested in. And the 3DS was available in Korea. You could buy it and you could play the games on it. So that was a safe home for it. I don't know what the PS4 situation is in South Korea. I can't imagine it's great. It's not great in Japan either. But the PC is at least a platform where you can enter markets anywhere in the world. As long as somebody can get by, can get around whatever they need to be able to download the game, and there may be some you know, IP restrictions or whatever, you can get their money from them. That's a big difference from, you know, other stuff, like trying to sell it as a raw PS4 game. Although, again, PS4 is region free and whatever, so there's room there. But it's a step towards making this a more worldwide game than...
Yeah, it's expanding its reach, not just Western eyes, you know, like you said, right. Other markets that are not just, you know, but certainly, you know, some of the changes that have been kind of suggested with the early showing of Monster Hunter World seems like the kind of things you would expect them to do if you're trying to make a greater appeal to, you know, Western console gamers as well, you know, as well. Yeah. But it's not just about that. It's about broadening the reach in general.
And I think the market's been primed for sort of, for Monster Hunter to go the route of games as a service.
Oh, God. Yeah.
If you want to talk business, that's, you know.
Yeah, you want to talk hard business.
Like Destiny, like Ghost Recon Wildlands,
like the Division, Destiny coming from BioWare, you know, which is also Destiny.
Anthem, yeah.
Yeah. Could that game have been any more Destiny, as an aside?
It's Destiny's X, Mass Effect, you know.
It was seeing
X Titanfall, basically.
Seeing those two together, it's like, oh man, guys.
Yeah, it looks good, but it also looks utterly derivative.
Yeah,
but then again, it's going up against a game with one of the worst stories ever.
Yeah, so BioWare stories. You're right.
Yep.
So
touche.
So yeah, I mean, if the next Monster Hunter is games as a service, it will absolutely be on Switch, because you don't cut yourself off at the face with games as a service. But you know, Capcom makes one of these games every year. They don't make a new game every year. They make a game, and then they make version of game. And we talked about one: Monster Hunter Cross, Monster Hunter Double Cross, Monster Hunter 4, Monster Hunter 4U, Monster Hunter 3. This happened three times, because there was Tri, then it was 3 on 3DS, and then it was what, 3U on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Like this is part of the pattern, and it's entirely plausible that the Switch wasn't in a place that they could port the game to it at the time, or they felt like they just didn't want to.
No, because if the construction that Ben sets up about two paths, you know, maybe, you know, Monster Hunter on Switch is going to be more, you know, like the successor to the way 3DS has been. That's kind of core Monster Hunter, the base of Monster Hunter, and then, you know, the more sort of expansionist forays are going to be on other consoles. So it's not even necessarily so much a technical barrier as it is just a kind of, you know, where the players are.
So, yeah, but if they come out with Monster Hunter World Awesome, or whatever dumb bullshit subtitle they'll give. I was going to say Monster Hunter World U, but that's somehow even worse. It's entirely plausible it could be there for that. They could just go like, okay, now it's on Switch too.
Yeah, well, I guess it would be at such a point that you've seen, you know, what that other kind of approach has produced, you know, and then it's going to be, okay, well, now that we've seen how people have responded to it, what does, you know, sort of seem to work about it and maybe what doesn't, then you can think about, okay, well, you know, actually that could be a fit for this other platform or whatever. I mean, it's just, for me, it's a bigger question about all this. It's not so much the way that Capcom sort of handled Monster Hunter so much as just the way they've handled Switch in general is more curious to me. You know, like, it just, because we've had those reports about them being able to, you know, influence Nintendo to actually change the hardware, to make changes in memory, wasn't it? That they wanted to have for the purposes of bringing presumably their MT framework stuff to it without too much trouble. And then, what is it exactly that they're, you know, bringing over to this thing? It just that's the curious part to me.
You know, they
can be close enough to have that kind of pull with Nintendo at that level of decision making, and yet also have so little. Street Fighter 2, and then Double Cross. You know, games which are not particularly sort of ambitious. But they have a lot of name cachet, and I don't want to sort of write them off as like completely irrelevant, but certainly, you know, from a development perspective and a creative perspective, like, it's very, very, you know, kind of safe kind of things, no particular kind of ambition there. So yeah, that's what makes me raise an eyebrow a bit, not so much Monster Hunter World's absence, but just the absence of other things.
Yeah, so to put some perspective here, Capcom actually did a stage presentation with Nintendo's hardware people, like at a Japanese event. I'm blanking on where. Actually, it may have been at There was a show they were at. They did a presentation talking about Switch, like a Capcom person and a Nintendo person on stage. And what's Capcom got to show for it? Fuck all. Statement, or they said it somewhere, that they've got the engine for RE7 running on Switch and that they view it as a viable platform for games. It's like, okay, so why? And before the show recorded, not before this question was recorded, we kind of ran through in a lead up talking about this, because of course, you know, as a disclaimer, we know Matt, who was working on this game and in fact demoed it at E3. You know, we were just talking about the state of Japanese publishers on Switch and the fact that a lot of them aren't there, or they've announced stuff but don't have anything to show for it. You know, they've announced 4 games, none are out. 6 games, 1 is out. You know, 2 games, none are out. You know, really only a handful of players seem to be all the way in. And they're ones that you'd expect, like Koei Tecmo, who's making a game with Nintendo. So yeah, they're making games on Switch. You know, you have some of the smaller players in Japan who are saying, we make games, they will be on Switch, because they feel like that's a platform where their game works particularly well. But Capcom's not among them. Capcom's announced 2 games. Monster Hunter Double Cross, which honestly doesn't look like it's coming to the West, and... Mm-hmm. Was it Street Fighter 2, Ultra Street Fighter 2, which, you know, I think I've seen reports that they were kind of approached to make that game, and then they went and charged $40 for it. So, like, whatever, yo. But, you know, we don't hear anything about any of these franchises that you would normally expect to see associated with Nintendo handheld or Nintendo system. Mm-hmm. So it's entirely plausible that the Japanese publishers, by and large, didn't put a lot of stock in Switch, and much like their Western counterparts, are now having to kind of figure out what to do with it, because the one publisher that did, who had a Switch launch game, really was Konami. They made an exclusive Switch fucking launch game, and it's a bad Bomberman game, and it sold super well, and it sold so well it seems to have shamed them into making it a passable Bomberman game through patches. Which is amazing.
I'm sorry, just the thought of Konami having shame has made me giggle.
I know, that's what's amazing about it. Of all people, they managed to feel like we should probably fix this game, and they did. They fixed it multiple times. It made it a decent game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't the first time that, you know, everybody's kind of taken a an initial pass on Nintendo hardware and then came back and,
I don't think there's anything particularly surprising about that in general. Mm-hmm. What surprises me is the fact that Capcom could be close enough to exert influence on that system, but have so little in the oven for it at the same time. That's the you think if you are that close to it, that your opinion carries weight. You think they would have had more skin in the game for Nintendo to kind of find that persuasive.
Think about the other stuff they haven't announced, like the Disney Afternoon Collection and the Mega Man Collection. Some of these Mega Man Collection games are from Nintendo platforms, We hear that the people making Disney Afternoon and Capcom never even approached them about considering a Switch version.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible.
And apparently, the second Mega Man Collection is not being handled by Digital Eclipse, but actually in-house.
Yes.
So this is purely a Capcom effort at this point. So certainly, it's kind of odd. But as you've kind of alluded to with the performance of the Switch, it might, there might be a course correction coming. Although, it's got off to a pretty good start in Japan. It certainly got to 1 million units much faster than PS4 did. And by extension, much faster than what Wii U did. But it has been supply constrained as well. I think we could all see that it would have got there faster than it has. But it's still obviously nothing compared to how fast things got to 1 million units back in the day. A PS2 scenario or the DS or something like that. But there's certain realities with the Japanese market at this point.
Switch is just about to cross 1 million in Japan, but keep in mind that in Japan there's only about 4.8 PS4s in the market.
No, exactly.
It's on pace to catch. Like, that's the thing. And it's
like I said, it reached that 1 million point of about half the time that PS4 did. And while being supply constrained with this whole, flash memory, it seems to be the primary culprit, right? That amount of flash memory is actually kind of scarce for
because everybody puts it in their cell phone.
Yeah, it's a bunch of devices competing for it, basically.
It's the crazy part about as we've moved towards like every device is essentially built out of the same parts, is that means lots of
there's only so
part.
Many of them to go around.
But yeah, eventually you run out of them. So there is a certain irony to them making this out of more standard parts versus Nintendo's usual bullshit. Like, what if we keep using power PCs? But like, at least if then you're not bidding against somebody else for power PCs, you're calling IBM going, hey, we want a new power PC. And they're like, wait, what? Yeah, sure. We could do that.
Yep.
But at some point, the Japanese publishers, especially who are trying to make games targeting Japan, we'll have to make a consideration. Do we make sure our games are built in such a way that while they may look better on PS4, we can downport them to Switch? Or do we commit and make games that we know will not run on Switch? They are simply too much. And something like Monster Hunter is going to take the first approach because they know where their bread is buttered. It's they know.
Oh, yeah, so they have a base. They have a reliable fan base that will buy these things. Yeah, even though, I mean, there was some sort of feeling that Double Cross, when it came out in 3DS, was a bit of a soft landing, and that's some of the reason why a Switch version of that quickly happened was because they're trying to, gin up the sales on it, to kind of make up for the shortfall a little bit. But in general, those games in Japan have done very well. And the thing about the Switch is it has that essential quality of that kind of multiplayer culture that's so important with Monster Hunter in Japan, of being portable. That you just whatever Monster Hunter World is and goes on to be, and kind of all it being on PS4 and Xbox One and PC, it can't substitute for that. Entirely, right. Can it? It is inherently a bit of a different branch, just on the absence of that kind of play alone.
They will need to, at some point, figure out what they want to do with that franchise if they want to continue to make money in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And they may say going online is fine because there are PC online games in Japan that are successful enough. I don't know what their long-term goal is, and it would be you know, it would be presumptive of me to go like, well, obviously they're going to make a Switch version of this game. They have to. But, you know, I think their intentions will be very clear to read in the next 2 or 3 years. One of the things that's super apparent, I don't think anybody here will dispute, is that the Japanese publishers simply were not ready for Switch. Because we talked about again that there nothing really came out in May, and there was definitely a slot there for somebody who had a game ready in May.
No, yeah, that was a
but
real opportunity.
Nobody did.
That was a real opportunity, and Street Fighter 2 ended up getting it. But you kind of feel like there could have been any number of traditional sort of major Japanese publishers, or maybe not even Japanese, but some could have effectively had that slot to themselves, and maybe done more with it than what Street Fighter 2 did, because of what it is, fundamentally a 25-year-old game, right. Or indeed you could just look at it as a 9-year-old game, or on the basis
of the Xbox 360 game,
the XBLA. I mean, there are differences, but it's fundamentally very similar. So
fairness, I mean, the Wii U stunk it up.
I suppose the flip side of that is that the Wii U was a dead system not walking for a long time, so that the sort of onset of a successor was something that everybody was expecting for quite a while.
Yeah.
'Cause you want to move on from that system that didn't do very well, and like I said, Capcom were obviously really deep in there, so you would have thought they'd be as prepared as anybody. Evidently that if that was the bar for being as prepared for anybody, it still wasn't very high.
Well, it's like, this is kind of the tightrope that Nintendo always walks, right? So if you're Capcom, you're looking at the PS4. Hey, what is the PS4? Ah, the PS4. It's just like the PS3, only better. What's the Switch? Well, it's going to be mobile. You got these detachable Joy-Cons, and they're, you can use them like normal joysticks, but then we also sell a Pro Controller, and then you can stand it up and play it on a tabletop. You're like, okay, what? Hold on a second. What the hell, right?
Well, I would argue for you, the PS4, it's nothing like the PS3, because you can actually make games on it.
well,
that's
what
Capcom heard.
The early phase PS3.
But, I mean, conceptually, Xbox 360 and Xbox One, same concept. PS3, PS4, same concept.
Right.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you've got to say,
Switch,
actually,
totally different, very
Microsoft
different.
Microsoft kind of got punished for not being, could sort of, for trying to stretch the concept a bit, didn't they?
Right. Exactly.
The whole, all your home entertainment kind of collapsed into one thing, and Kinect and all this stuff. And, that actually set them back. They would have been better just selling it as, no, it really is just like the 360, but better.
Mm-hmm. So, publishers don't like change. They don't like it. As much as they bullshit about, we have to keep charging this industry for it. No, you want a new version of last generation's console so you can make a new first-person shooter.
Well,
for
to
it.
Be
no,
honest,
no, they
exactly
want a new
version really
of
want.
Last generation's console so they can port last generation's version to it.
Oh, and also just now, you go to
$35.99.
The games as service thing. It's not even so much about versions anymore. It's about
it's loot boxes.
How can you keep making money off the same game?
Can I port last generation's game to this generation and then add loot boxes and make you pay for the privilege of it?
Yeah, but I think that
fuck you, Activision.
We're so cynical.
Fundamentally, I think Monster Hunter has got a secure future on Switch of some sort. I guess the question is how successful is the Monster Hunter World going to be, and then what kind of feedback loop gets established between that and like the more traditional sort of aspect of the series? Does it start to influence, do they say, actually, we're going to make all Monster Hunter games on all platforms more like this one, or does it become a sort of successful branch but that remains quite discreet from the others? So I guess that would be my question. Or of course it could just flop There's always right. that.
I mean, but, it could do anything. Or it could just be, this is it. This is
in
the
all
game,
of the in all of these scenarios, forever. Though, I think Nintendo, you know, Switch will have, you know, Monster Hunter games coming for it in some form. But I guess perhaps the success or failure of World might affect how, you know, how those games sort of are shaped in the future.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'd be very surprised if we don't see a Monster Hunter game on Switch by the end of 2018. I'd be very, very surprised.
Yeah, I think
an actual original.
Now,
yeah,
yeah, know, like yeah, like actually. An actual new entry as opposed.
One
to
year from
cross.
Now, we will be talking about a Monster Hunter on Switch, or we will know for a fact that Capcom really did not prepare for the Switch. Like they really were on the off sides going like, this thing's not going to work. I think it'll be very apparent if a year from now they have nothing to show in that space that they really weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect they will be forced to get ready. Anyway, we're going to read one last email, and I'm going to read it because it's not long. And it feels like we've been recording this show for like 6 hours, but it is what it is. David from California writes, "Hey, RFN crew. Everyone was expecting Retro Studios to show their new game at this year's E3, yet they didn't show up. When do you think they will reveal their new game, and do you think they are too busy eating prime rib? Thanks, and keep up the great work." I mean, this episode is not is great work is not included in this episode. We cannot deliver on the impossible.
I mean, it was brisket though, right? Not prime rib.
It was brisket. Yeah, it's brisket. They are big, like prime rib, whatever. But like real, like smoked brisket is.
Well, I like prime rib, man. Prime rib.
Yeah,
really
prime
good.
Rib is fine, but like prime rib shit, you go get at Arby's, man.
Oh, come
brisket.
On, man.
Brisket is created by artisans.
Get out of here.
Like, they stand
yeah,
up by
I'm not debating
the...
that fact, but
yeah,
I think...
Yeah, like prime
you know,
rib, get the, what are you, a plebeian?
Lay off
get
the prime
shit
rib.
Get the out of here.
Lay off the prime rib, bro.
Like, if it's not been smoked for 97 hours, I don't want it. I want to know that somebody's family is at home and lonely while this is being made, or it won't taste as good.
Mm-hmm. So you want to eat Snoop Dogg, basically, is what you're saying.
No! That's not what I'm saying at all. Where the fuck did that come from?
You know Snoop Dogg's been smoking for 97 hours? Come on.
Oh, God. Anyway.
No, I just got this image of like a sort of giant creature smoking to Snoop Dogg while he is himself smoking drugs. Sort of an infinite regression thing going on.
Where is Retro's new game? And the obvious answer is any variation of in a smoker.
It's not a Metroid, and it's not Metroid Prime 4. So,
yeah,
no, but this is about the only thing I didn't get 100% wrong in the predictions. I think
you sure didn't.
In that, I didn't think Retro's game would be Metroid. So I wasn't particularly convinced it would show up this year either. Although I thought it could do, considering you know the time frame since Tropical Freeze, but I didn't think it was a lock. But yeah, you know, so clearly it's not a surprise to me that it's not Metroid. It's a little bit surprising given that there are actually two Metroid projects, I guess.
Yes.
But, you know, it does seem like basically
and one's being made in Spain of all places.
Basically, well, it does seem like though that you know Tanabe, you know, has kind of concluded his work with Retro. You know, like he's not really coordinating their work anymore the way he used to. So now, you know, if there's and he is the Metroid Prime producer, so you know we've had Metroid Prime Federation Force that he was involved with, and then you know we're gonna have Metroid Prime 4 that he's involved with, but it basically seems like the sort of Metroid Prime you know, part of that divorce, if it is a divorce, you know, he's got to keep that, not them. It would seem
they got the car. He got Samus.
Yeah, pretty much. Samus, when you're seeing through her eyes rather than in a side scrolling perspective. But you know, when are we going to see it? As we've discussed, I mean, before.
Nintendo's approach with E3 these days. I think they've taken a narrower sort of focus. They have other venues, they have other, you know, sort of chances to talk about stuff. So it doesn't mean that it would necessarily be a whole other year until we would see it. I think it's possible we could see it sooner. Certainly, I mean, God, if he was going to use the same standard of we can just show a logo, like the way they did with Prime 4.
They could have shown it 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, at this point, though, can we agree that it's a console game and not a handheld?
It's not a 3DS game. Well, yeah. let me take something. I will agree it is not a 3DS game. I will not agree that there's not some other fucking piece of hardware we don't know about that this thing could be on. Like, Nintendo could curveball the shit out of us and just be like, here's the 4DS, well, fuckers. Have fun.
I think if anything, I think we'll hear about it maybe around Christmas time, or at least maybe January would be actually
in that
more
in
sensible.
That like right before the end of the year thing where they talk about some stuff coming.
Yeah, I mean, I would think like I think that because I think this would be a console game and retro and it's highly anticipated. Everybody's been wondering what they're doing. I would think that Nintendo would maybe have its own direct. I would think it would be a major. Where I'm going with this, I think it would be a major project.
That's what makes me think
it wouldn't be something they would just leak out, you know?
That's what makes me think we're not going to see it until the next E3, because why would they show it in a direct? Because they. The Metroid title card, which honestly I thought kind of sucked. I mean, it's a title card. It can only suck so bad, but like, it was kind of lame. Like, it's just, oh, it's Galaxy resuming. Oh, no, that looks like a, that looks vaguely like the Metroid logo and the number 4. Oh, my God. Like, it was just kind of shitty. Like, if they just walked outside, Metroid 4 is in development. Bye. Like, I would almost appreciate the expediency of that rather than the,
I don't know.
The
I don't even know what you want anymore, James.
Panning zoom. I want.
What do you want? I mean,
I want Ogre Battle 3, John. It's what I want.
The Final Fantasy remake is being made, James. What more do you want?
I don't fucking care about Final Fantasy 7, John.
Yeah. He doesn't want Ogre Battle 3. He wants the logo for it. With
I
the
want
caption
a slow
saying now in development
zoom
for Switch.
Of the Ogre Battle logo. Yes, exactly. That's what I want. But it's, I would think that when they show Retro's next thing, it's going to be fully developed. It's going to be playable. It's going to be showable.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing. I mean, the Prime 4 thing is the exception, mostly. You know,
right,
like,
and they even said that.
Obviously, we're talking about a 3DS game here, but look at Metroid Samus Returns. You know, like, that game is basically done.
Right.
And, you know, it's been in development for 2 years. And yes, there was, you know, the reporting that Nintendo Life had about Mercury Steam sort of pitching a Metroid game to Nintendo a few years ago. But basically, other than that, we've had no inkling that this was happening. And then, you know, once it's basically finished, they say, guess what? This is happening. So, yeah, when we see Retro's game, it could be quite far along. I certainly wouldn't rule out, you know, it being, I'd be, let's put it this way, I'd be shocked if, you know, next year's E3 comes along and we still haven't heard anything about it after that, you know.
I mean, like, unless it got rebooted.
I could see them doing this. I could see them dropping something at the end of a direct in January and just saying, oh, by the way, Retro is working on a game and we'll tell you more about it in the months to come.
I guess the interesting the interesting part about this, though, is, you know, what cachet does Retro
That's the thing. I don't think beyond the enthusiast media and its consumers, Retro has a bunch of cachet. I think
even for the enthusiast people, like, a lot of their cachet is bound up in Metroid Prime, and that's a separate
thing.
Yeah, I mean, like,
to go with the quote, Donkey Kong, quote, fucking Donkey Kong, ! Like, yeah. You're right. Like, there's this thought that they are the people who make Metroid Prime. And Nintendo's press, or not press release, the press kit, the PDF, such as it is, it wasn't even a press kit, it was just a PDF, spent a lot of time saying, but team of very highly talented developers assembled. It's like, okay, you're telling us don't freak out, it's not Retro.
Retro. You don't know who these people are, but they're awesome. Trust us. Like,
yeah,
that,
I mean,
you know,
Retro to me is kind of like Rare, where a lot of the reason why people love them is based on what they did. You know,
and also you got to talk about the personnel turnover,
right?
Like, you know, if you go back, I mean, your Metroid Prime 3 was a long time ago now. How many people are left? you know, at this point, you know, a lot of, you know, people went off to form Armature and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, and the Tanabe thing, because I don't think, obviously, the Donkey Kong games were a result of their work with Tanabe also.
Right.
But, you know, I think we could safely conclude that that phase of their life is over. You know, that whatever they're doing for Nintendo now, it's not, you know, being overseen by him, presumably. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting how you would handle it in terms of, like, yeah. Okay, you know, this is the next game from Retro. Why should you be excited about that? Is, you know, is it because you were someone who liked the DK games? Is it because you're someone who liked the Metroid games? Or is it because of what this unknown game is? I still continue to think that it's going to be something that, you know, is trying to fill a niche that, especially because of this sort of, you know, slow reaction from third parties, or, you know, disinterest from third parties or whatever, it's going to try and fill a niche, you know, in the Switch's lineup that you know, the rest of Nintendo's developers, you know, don't naturally fill. And I think that might be more the why you're supposed to get excited about it. You know, it's like it's something new. That would be my guess, but that is still a guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's I mean, we have no proof that Retro Studios, as it stands, can make a good game on their own without a lot of supervision.
Nope, because they hadn't before Nintendo came in the door. And yep. the thing is, like, it's debatable what the people who left for Armature have produced as a consequence of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've made a couple things. They made that game for Microsoft, and with the help of his royal con man himself. What was that game called? The game where they had, like, robots. Oh.
The game where they had zombies.
It was all right, jerk.
they made Armature made they made that Arkham Blackgate, right? Didn't they?
They did make Arkham Origins Blackgate. They made ReCore. That was the game I was thinking about.
Yes, that's right. With Inafune, the con.
You know, James, it makes me laugh when you call me a jerk because I know you've been actually wounded.
Yeah, ReCore. You're a real piece of shit, John Lindemann. They made the Vita port of the Metal Gear Solid HD collection. They made Arkham Origins Blackgate. They made an Injustice port for Vita.
Yeah, and they offered to do a Wii U port of the Unreal Engine that's unnecessary now for Bloodstained. That version's dead.
Yeah, their only real original game that I can see on here that's come out is ReCore.
But like I said, I mean, look, you don't know all these things. You know, like I said, a large part of the personnel's kind of got scattered across different places now. I mean, the problem with all of that history, I don't know what it's worth anymore, to be honest. That doesn't mean I'm not interested in what Retro's going to be doing.
Because
I, for one, actually really like those DK games
for
a start.
Games.
And that, you know, that was not like, that's not ancient history by any means. But even though, you know, it does seem like, you know, this may well be quite a different project. As I said, I mean, I still kind of think that, you know, they've got to go back to the DK well at some point, because I think they've been selling too many units not to. But for now, you've got Kirby and Yoshi, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think they've probably been grooming somebody else, you know, Monster Games, to take over that series. So for now, I think the place where Retro's game could fit in lies elsewhere. But in terms of just the quality of the work, I think it was very good.
Well,
so,
has Next Level been working with Tanabe? Like,
yeah, Next Level did, with Federation Force.
That's true. Like, but like, they've obviously got other. I mean, it's entirely possible Tanabe could still be working with them. Like, we can't.
Possible. It does seem like there's been, you know, some there've been sort of reports and suggestions of a bit of a rupture there. And it seems like perhaps, you know, if Tanabe is handling Metroid Prime 4 without them, perhaps, you know, that's the end of that kind of collaboration. But we don't know exactly what the situation is.
But I will say what the game definitely is, because we do know this, and it is definitely brisket related. It is Texas Brisket Challenge, starring Tony Romo and
Tony Nidus. Romo
and Nidus. Nidus isn't even his dog. But the Jerry Rice license was worth less.
Nidus is expanding the brand.
Yeah, Nidus has dumped Jerry Rice for a more recent model.
Well, yeah, he's now a highly paid influencer.
Jerry Rice is like an actual legitimate contender. I'm no Niners fan, so it didn't bring me pleasure.
Yeah.
He's a legitimate contender for like best NFL player ever at like any position. I refuse to believe that Romo is any kind of upgrade on that.
Yeah, but did he get on TV for Dairy Jessica Simpson? He did not, and therefore Nidus has made his choice. Nidus has got his own career to worry about. He can't be hamstrung by a star of a bygone era.
This is correct.
I like that the biggest indignity of this episode is my bullshit like Texas brisket challenge that's just adding pluses like it's fucking Nintendogs plus cats at this point. And the biggest indignity is that I replaced Jerry Rice with Tony Romo.
It's not a trade up, all right.
I didn't say it was a trade up. since when has a team ever made a trade up when trading for a quarterback? Also, so it's always a trade freak out.
Dogs are intrinsically loyal creatures. They would not abandon Jerry Rice.
Nidus, I don't know. It was a decision made by Nidus' agent, not by Nidus himself. It's not personal. It's just business. It's always just business. So you can stay tuned. If you check back in exactly 365 days, you will have seen Texas Brisket Challenge starring Tony Romo, Nidus plus cats.
And Odell Beckham.
No, just his shoes.
Who's the final boss, the kicking cage thing?
It's the final smoker, please. It's and it will not, absolutely not feature prime rib.
Please keep dissing prime rib, man. Somebody has to defend prime rib on this podcast. And I guess it has to be me. It's Greg's over there in the neutral corner.
Look, I will give you a rack of ribs. I will give you that. If you want to go with that, we can put that in there. But my Texas brisket challenge will be unsullied by fucking deli meat.
What?
Get that right. Carver's Night bullshit out of here. All right, what are we doing? Are we hosting a podcast? No. Are we doing that? This was a podcast. It was called Radio Free Nintendo. I don't know if we're going to do another one after that. That was Guillaume the Moral Compass as finally proven.
Yep.
That we cannot go on without him. But he'll be back next week probably hears this and like holds us hostage for it.
Yeah, Guillaume is somewhere in the Highlands saying, I sense disappointment.
I hope this gets out before Guillaume flies home. So he's on an airplane listening to this and has to listen to it on that whole flight back from Europe. Because I had that experience coming back from Japan.
Yeah. And you know, he'll be sitting there eating his haggis to go.
His haggis
whatever.
To go.
Are
you proposing the sequel is Scottish Haggis Challenge? What are you? I don't know any Scottish. Oh no, I do. I'm trying to think of who the best Scottish celebrity to plug in here would be.
Sean Connery.
I don't know. Yeah, I was going to go with Sir Sean Connery, but he might not make it to the release of that game.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's Scottish. Haggis Challenge starring Sean Connery and the dragon from whatever that fucking dragon movie he made was. Dragonheart. And Joanna Dark. Yes, that's this game. So, on that, you can send your emails to this shit show to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com and we'll do whatever the hell we just did to them.
Joanna. Pass the brisket.
Oh, I'm sorry. Greg, get us out of here.
Well, you know, I thought I'd leave music in your capable hands.
Oh, good. My capable hands. All right, so E3 just happened. We got to see that, in fact, we are going to get Xenoblade 2 this year. It is confirmed. We were We were convinced, perhaps, by many that this wasn't going to happen. But it is. 2017, we are getting Xenoblade 2. And to celebrate, Nintendo put a bunch of new music on the Xenoblade 2 website. One of these or a few of these songs are very, very Xenoblade, because, of course, they brought back the composers to Xenoblade.
Yeah, I get, but it's minus Shimomura, though, isn't it?
Minus Shimomura, but Shimomura didn't do a ton of the music in that.
No, but there's some that were very Shimomura.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Mitsuda's back. That's the big one.
Yeah, there's the Battle Trigger theme that they released. Someone on Twitter described it to me as the sequel to the battle theme from Xenoblade. Quote, if music can have sequels, this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, this and Unforgiven 2 by Metallica. I think there was an Unforgiven 3 as well, actually. So, yeah, music can have sequels. But, yeah, this might be the most meaningful way in which this is a sequel to the original Xenoblade.
For the most part, yeah.
Because, it's not going to be that, like, closely tied in, apparently.
There is a red, highly inefficient-looking sword. So maybe
People living on giant creatures. But yeah. Like, I think it's more sort of just general thematic than anything more than that.
So in this case, one of the songs they released, though, is a piano melody that, again, sounds very Mitsuda, called Elysium of the Blue Sky. I'm not sure people get the names from, but this is the name everybody has on it, so I assume it's valid. And on that, we are going to end this thing. John, do you have any more defense of Prime Rib for us? Are we good?
No, I mean, just everybody should try Prime Rib. Go out and get it. It's the best meat out there.
Never apologize for enjoying Prime Rib.
It's never apologize.
It's the best meat out. There's no meat better.
John.
Apparently. John. It's the worst impersonation out there. Bye, everybody.
Try the Prime Rib.